Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Tuesday morning, Tuesday the 30th of January, Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests. 952-784-4000, the phone number, studio at tre.radio, the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. Joining me in the studio today, Nathan Thomas, Kate Mulvey and Claudio De La Torre. After a busy first hour, we move away from the fallout from the President's Club dinner to a much calmer subject, I think we'll all agree, which is the ongoing situation in Catalonia. Catalonia's future ex-president must return to Spain if he wants to form a new government, a top court has ruled. Carles Puigdemont fled after the Catalonian parliament was dissolved by the Spanish government when it made what they decided was an illegal declaration of independence following last October's contested referendum in the region. A new election has since given the separatist parties a slim majority, Ciudadanos being a major winner there. But the constitutional court has ruled that if Mr. Puigdemont wants to lead a new government, he must be present in the regional parliament to get the authority. The court went on to say that today's planned session will be suspended if Puigdemont tries to be re-elected without being physically present in the chamber. And just looking at the social media, the Twitter feeds and everything, the Catalan speaker has announced a delay of today's planned investiture session. I will not propose any candidate that is not Puigdemont, says Roger Torrent at a press conference this morning. Today's planned investiture session, which potentially could have seen Puigdemont voted back into power, has been suspended. He stated that he would not propose any candidate for the position of Premier unless it was Puigdemont. Pictures of the police actually... The police actually checking cars near the Catalan Parliament building to see that he's not in the boot of any of the cars coming close to the Parliament building. Claudio, your thoughts on the situation so far?
Well, we are back to the same situation where the Speaker of the Parliament is adamant to propose Mr. Puigdemont as candidate, despite the Constitutional Court clearly judging that if Mr. Puigdemont wants to be invested president of Catalonia, he must be president. He must be present in the Chamber of Barcelona. So Mr. Torrent has said, as you just said now, that he does not think of any other candidate except Mr. Puigdemont, which makes the situation very difficult because Mr. Puigdemont, as we all know, is a fugitive in Brussels. He is under criminal investigation with an arrest warrant the moment he puts foot in Spain. So you can imagine how complicated the situation is. They have not changed, the separatist parties have not changed their attitude. They still want to have a confrontation both with the Constitutional Court, with the government, and with the whole opposition. So unless they change their attitude and they propose another candidate that is present in Spain and that is not under criminal investigation and things are going to get very messy again. So as the Speaker of the Parliament, Mr. Torrent, knows very well what the situation is, he has postponed the session just to, we don't know whether it's to gain time or lose time.
Our colleague Simon Hunter at El País in English, who we refer to quite frequently on here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, is sending the following tweets at the moment. Catalan Parliamentary Speaker Roger Torrent: no one will decide who has to be Premier, not the Deputy Prime Minister, nor the Constitutional Court. It's the deputies in the Parliament who will decide. The Spanish state has shown one of its darkest sides from a democratic point of view. He continued speaking about the conditions opposed by the Constitutional Court on the investiture of Puigdemont. I'm not going to propose any other candidate who is not Puigdemont. Premier Puigdemont has every right to be voted in. The Spanish government and the Constitutional Court are trying to violate the rights of millions of Catalans, and we will not accept this. Are we back to square one here, Nathan?
It's exactly where we are. The Spanish government, the Madrid government, still is controlling Catalonia. It doesn't seem, and you know, that there are riots in the streets every day. Catalonia continues to exist. Long term, the uncertainty is certainly not good either for Spain or Catalonia, but I don't think we're any closer to a solution to the situation than we were a week ago or 2 weeks ago or anything else. You know, those who want independence are not going to, at this point, it seems, settle for anything less than that. And this Spanish government says they have the law and the Constitution behind them. And here we sit.
Claudia, where do you think we go from here then? I mean, you know, you've been following this very, very closely since the October, the illegal referendum in October. Where does Rajoy go from here? And where does Barcelona go from here? And where do the other provinces and autonomous regions of Spain go from here?
Well, of course, I think this has the fact that Mr. Puigdemont doesn't want to come back to Spain without guarantees of not being arrested is completely hypocritical, because he has told the whole international community that the judicial power in Spain is not independent and that he is being politically persecuted, yet he's asking the government to intervene with the judicial courts to give him immunity to be able to come back to Spain without being arrested. So it doesn't really make sense when it was a court decision. It was not the central government that ordered his arrest and the other regional councillors. It was the first Audiencia Nacional and then the Supreme Court of Spain. It was the judges who decided this, and yet Puigdemont is begging Rajoy to be allowed to come back with him with impunity. So it's an interesting stance.
You could argue, though, that, you know, Puigdemont and the Catalans have outsmarted Madrid in this one, because they called that illegal referendum in October, kind of knowing that Rajoy and Madrid would act in the way that they did by sending in quite heavy-handedly the Guardia Civil. Massive outrage, it seemed to be, on social media. Images of, you know, Catalan, democratic Catalans being batoned, etc., etc. If Puigdemont was to land on Spanish soil and was arrested and thrown into a jail on charges of treason and sedition, which is what he's facing, surely, again, a massive round of public international condemnation would ensue.
I'm not sure it would, because a lot of governments face a greater or lesser version of the same thing. A lot of countries have areas that say, well, we really should be independent. We supply all the money for the country, and, you know, we don't get back what we should. A lot of countries face this. A lot of them, well, every country rules by laws, and Spanish laws are what they are. It's very difficult to argue that. You may say this is an unfair law. It's a law we don't like. You may criticize the law, but it still, at this point, is the law. And I think the international condemnation was because of the violence, and rightfully so. But I think that was a mistake by the Spanish government. They went in heavy-handed. It was, and I think many people beforehand saw that this is not the way to deal with it. And they have stopped that. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of violence since October 1st, since that so-called referendum. So the Spanish government, I think, has learned, and they're not doing that. There are protests, yes, but they are peaceful. I think we're to the point of it just goes on this way, or the people who want independence, it's like any other situation. If you want it badly enough, you will then ratchet it up to the next level, which is violence. And I don't think that's going to happen.
And we've got a caller on the line. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Well, Nicholas here. I think everybody's forgetting two points. Number one, Puigdemont also instigated diversion of funds, public funds for his cause, not on the for the public services. He used it for his own ends and his own ambitions. The other thing is, about going in heavy-handed, I must point out that teachers in Catalonia sent a letter saying that, more or less, you're either with us or against us. Another one, a friend of mine, went shopping on the day of the so-called Sodo strike and was harassed for doing her shopping because she didn't agree, and nor did the shopkeeper. So heavy-handed, I think they were aggravating, they were asking for it, and what they really want are martyrs, which will add to their cause and justify what they're craving for, which is to go back to the Middle Ages almost, because when the rest of the world is united, they just want to separate, and they think they can do it financially. But I think they're in for a big wake-up if they do.
You're nodding your head there, Claudio.
Of course they are. The economic harm that the separatists have done to Catalonia in the last quarter of 2017 has been absolutely devastating. The thousands of companies that have left, the consumer confidence has fallen, tourism has fallen. It's been really, really bad. And thankfully, the government intervened in Catalonia, otherwise it would have been a lot worse. While the whole of Spain has been growing substantially and employment is on the rise and consumer confidence and many other indicators on the rise. In Catalonia, it's been sliding. And it's normal with the uncertainty that the separatists have created. What can one expect? Who would want to invest there or even visit in some cases with the scenes that we've been seeing? But I think they are obvious. The separatists are realizing little by little that the harm that they're doing is terrible and that it must come to an end. And Mr. Puigdemont is living in a complete bubble of irreality. He wants to be president of a region from Brussels via Skype, which is completely unheard of in any country. And he's also realizing that he's completely isolated amongst the international community. Last week, he went to Denmark, to the University of Copenhagen, and very prestigious professor in the university questioned Puigdemont's motives of independence, and he really didn't know how to answer many questions. And obviously, as we all know, he's very isolated because there's not one single country in the EU who has supported his battle for independence. And the whole EU and countries in Asia, Africa, South America, they have all supported the Spanish government's defense of the constitution and law and order. So if Puigdemont does want to come back to Spain, he'll have to face the music and face the consequences, like his vice president, Junqueras, who is currently in jail. But at least I respect him because he He has assumed the consequences of his actions, and he is in prison at the moment. When Puigdemont left to Brussels, was living the high life, going to the opera, staying in luxury hotels, while his vice presidents and other ministers were in jail. So it just speaks a lot about him.
Nicola, do you want to come back on any of those points?
Just 100% behind this gentleman. I think he's right. I agree everything what he's saying. And I wish more people would wake up and think and just see these photographs that are put on social media, which are totally wrong, because some of them were proved false, others were proved to have been taken years before in several other protests. So, yes, I agree absolutely with this gentleman. Hear, hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call in. Nathan?
Well, I think we're pretty much past the problem with the violence. I mean, the Spanish government, I think, reacted badly to the vote trying to stop it. It was something that they were not going to be able to stop, and they tried, and it got violent, and it got nasty and messy and everything else. They had done what they needed to do, which is says, go out and vote. It doesn't count. And we have the law behind us, and that was that. They'd have been much better off, I think, had they just let it go through and, okay, fine. They made a mistake, but I think they have rectified that. You haven't seen masses of Guardia Civil, outside police from outside of Catalonia in there harassing people, trying to take over and so on. I'm not sure going to jail, which some of these people have. I mean, Puigdemont, yes, he left the country, so he still could have a voice, I assume, was the justification for it. But I'm not sure them going to jail is really getting themselves and their movement anything. People haven't gone on strike in Catalonia saying until they're released, we won't go to work, we won't do this, or we will do this, or whatever. I think we are at a point, and have been for quite a while, the only thing that they have to do is totally revolt against the government. And I don't think the will is there in Catalonia, because most of the polls that we see pretty much divide it equally for independence and not. And if you've got that kind of split among the population, you're not really, I don't think, going to have a popular uprising that is going to, well, we're just leaving Spain, we're closing our borders, that's it. And then Spain is at a point where they're going to have to send in the troops and put down the rebellion. I don't think we're ever going to get to that point, but I don't see that there is much that can be done unless you take that step.
So basically, we're looking at a point of stalemate then.
Yes.
For the next...
until everybody gets tired of it and says, Spain is being hurt, Catalonia is being hurt, let's stop hurting ourselves and do whatever. I mean, it doesn't really matter what they do. Obviously, I don't think Spain is going to give them...
It's going to continue, because this is only the start of it, because bear in mind they are... over 15 members of parliament in Catalonia who have been charged criminally for the declaration of independence and embezzlement of public funds, etc., etc. And the Supreme Court is going to judge them this year. So that will open another can of worms. One, if they are sentenced to long prison sentences, will the unrest could continue perhaps? So anything can happen. But however, I predict that this legislature is going to last very little, and Article 155 will have to be prolonged, because if the Speaker of the Catalan Parliament continues to defy the Constitutional Court and continues to defy everyone that doesn't agree with him, basically, because the opposition has been silenced in many occasions. As we know, Carlos Puigdemont has never won an election. He arrived as president when Artur Mas had to resign due to corruption and the illegal independence declaration referendum celebrated in 2014. And now Puigdemont was beaten by Inés Arrimadas of Ciudadanos, who came first place. So Puigdemont has never won an election, and that's very important to remark. And I keep on insisting that the international press, in my opinion, have done a very bad job reporting the situation on Catalonia. And I think they have failed to talk to all sides, and they have not stated all the facts regarding to the vote. And yes, I think that the reporting could be improved drastically.
I mean, do you think that, you know, Puigdemont could become, if you like, the Julian Assange of this, and just stay in, remain in Brussels and in Finland, just being a thorn in the side of everybody? Because the reason that he was in Denmark, one of the things he raised when he was in Copenhagen last week, was the fact that he was supporting Greenland and the Faroe Islands and their calls for greater autonomy. And I said this last week, you know, is he going to become the champion for small, independent European nation states, the shudder though Brussels may think of it?
He may do that, he may become that, but that's not going to bother Spain a whole lot. again, like you say, he is a he can become, as Assange is, a thorn to some organizations, some countries, some, you know, other groups that disagree with him. But a thorn is a thorn, it is not a revolution.
And we have an email on at studio@tre.radio, which says, Catalonia situation, a bit like Brexit then, eh? And we'll be talking about that after this.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. 30 minutes of the show to go. We go live to the lines, 952-78-4000. Good morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Oh, excuse me. Good morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, good morning to you, Giles. It's Robert McAngus. Good morning.
Morning, Robert.
My question to your colleagues or your guests are, if Puigdemont has committed a crime, treason, has been spoken this morning, and there is an arrest warrant for him, why hasn't it been activated? Why haven't they gone and arrested him in Brussels, or in Denmark, or in any of the other European countries?
Nathan?
Because Spain cancelled the international arrest warrant, so he's only liable to be arrested if he comes back to Spain. Why they did that, yeah. I don't know, but it's... Again, if you commit a crime in a country, unless the country asks other countries to arrest this person for whatever, they're not going to do it just because, oh, we heard he committed a crime in this country, let's go out and arrest him.
Well, I accept that, but in fact, that's exactly what the British government has done with Julian Assange, because his international arrest warrant has been dropped, but they've still got him in the embassy. So if it works for one, it works for everybody. If they're going to only arrest him when he comes back, then I think, in my opinion, as humble as it is, that's a very foolish and short-sighted thing. Go and get the guy, bring him back, and put him in prison, and then stop all the nonsense. And if there's if he's committed a crime, how can he run for government?
Well, he, according to the Spanish government, which is running Catalonia under 155, he can't.
Yes.
So he won't. So that won't happen. As far as going to get him, the one thing I think, and I'm trying to read the minds of the Spanish government, which is...
And I love it when you do that.
A frightening idea. But
yes.
I think at this point, he's up there and he's a thorn. But first of all, if they reinstated the international arrest warrant, then... You know, the other countries would have, Belgium would have to do it, and they've said they wouldn't because it's not a crime there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is, I think it would also make him a martyr if he is dragged out of Belgium, extradited to Spain, and then thrown in jail. And I think they have made a decision that the Spanish government, the whole situation will be worse off if he is turned into a martyr than he is just left alone and wander around Brussels or wherever if he wants to, because he's not really hurting anything.
Going to bring Claudio in at this point. Claudio.
Yeah, please, yes.
Well, one must be aware that Mr. Puigdemont did not go to Brussels because of the good weather or the great chocolates. He went there because the laws in Belgium are very lax when it comes to extraditions. And, for example, contrary to France, Germany, Italy, United Kingdom, Belgium does not contemplate the crimes of sedition and rebellion the same way that most countries do. They do have those crimes, but under different circumstances. So he went to Belgium knowing that there the law is a lot more permissive. And in the past, convicted terrorists of ETA have exiled to Belgium because when it comes to extradition, the laws are very protective there. So that's why it's difficult. For example, if he would have gone to France or Portugal, for instance, he would have been deported immediately back to Spain. And even President Macron said that if Puigdemont went to France and Spain reactivated the order, he would be arrested. But that's not the case. And when he went to Copenhagen a week ago, the risk of him being arrested was very high. They could have reactivated the European arrest warrant, but it was decided it was best not to, to avoid causing more commotion and drama, and also because he was only there for 24 hours. It was a very quick visit. So in the time that the arrest warrant was activated, he could have already left the country again. So I hope the explanation was useful to you.
Oh, absolutely, Claudio. I think you and Nathan's were lucid and clear, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No problem. And the other, of course, the other thing he could have done, he could have really sort of just fled to Gibraltar. That would have really made things interesting for everybody concerned.
Yeah.
Good to have you with us. 952-784-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official.
BBC World Service with media partner, Talk Radio Europe. When America goes to sleep, people on the other side of the world are waking up.
This is World Update. I'm Dan Damon. You're listening to the BBC World Service.
The BBC keeps you connected to the world.
It's 10 minutes past 8.
And we'll speak to our correspondent in Berlin in just a few minutes' time.
There is no food, there is no medical. Lots of people are injured, and we ask the international community to intervene.
So there may be a view in the US that, look, this consensus is in danger of falling apart or being too disparate.
On the markets at the moment, the FTSE 100 is down more than 0.5%. This is the BBC.
Presenting the BBC World Service on Talk Radio Europe. Overnight, every night.
And don't forget, you can also catch Stephen Ritson coming up with Europe Today in the within the next 24 minutes or so. Looking at, let's move to turn our attention to the UK, though, for the final section of the show. As Theresa May prepares to fly to China, the papers are sending her off with the grumbles of Tory MPs ringing in her ears. Former Education Secretary Nicky Morgan has written on the Tory news website Conservative Home. She says the Prime Minister should lead the way, driving her ministers to think big and bold. The Guardian reports that the muttering from the backbenchers has led to 40 MPs submitting letters of no confidence in Mrs. May to the chairman of the 1922 committee. The paper predicts that more may do so if the party performs badly at forthcoming local elections in May. The Daily Mail, however, quotes Tory backbencher Nigel Evans, who wants the cabinet to be more supportive. Socks come in pairs, he tells the paper, and Boris Johnson and Philip Hammond should each put one in their mouths. Elsewhere, The Sun describes Liam Fox's intervention in the Conservatives' internal struggle over Brexit as a bombshell. He uses the paper to tell hardline Tory Eurosceptics they must live with the disappointment and accept a softer departure from the EU. The Sun says the move to pan conservative hardliners signals even he, a stalwart of the Tory right, is softening his stance on Brexit. And Raphael Baer in The Guardian is less convinced that this will be accepted by the Brexiteers. There's a sizable faction, he says, that won't believe Britain is leaving the EU until May burns the Treaty of Rome and scatters its ashes from the Queen Elizabeth Tower. So Theresa May seemingly still having a torrid time over Brexit. Kate, you'll have your thoughts because you've been quiet for a bit.
Yes, well, I mean, should she stay or should she go? She should never have started off in the first place, I think. But it's an unprecedented job. And I think the problem is, right from the get-go, the power politics played by the EU, she completely rolled over. And what the problem really, I think, is the infighting that has gone on, that has shown the EU and the world that we don't know what we want, that we're confused, that we are weak, which, in my personal opinion, is Remainers trying to scupper the deal, because now we've got Hammond saying, oh, we want complete alignment. It will almost be the same. What about the referendum? The point is, the vote was done. If it doesn't mean anything, it shouldn't have happened in the first place. This view of a second referendum is absurd. And the problem is, the Remainers, in my opinion, have had too much say. And they are the ones who are scuppering the deal. So will it be a soft deal? Will it be a hard deal? She said in her Lancaster speech, it will be borders, trade and sovereignty. Now Jacob Rees-Mogg is saying, we're going to be a vassal state, which we most probably will be, which is a tragedy for our country.
Your thoughts on where we are so far, Nathan, with this one?
Her problem continues to be she cannot pull her government together and come up with one viewpoint of what Brexit should be. Everybody gets their own opinion. Everybody trumpets it very loudly. And everybody has their own bunch of followers. And on we go. As far as her staying or going, in the groups you mentioned that are, you know, suggesting that she should be leaving, the one other one that may be the most important is apparently a lot of the heavy donors to the Conservative Party are beginning to grumble about the leadership or lack of leadership. And when the money starts drying up, that's going to get serious for a whole lot of people.
The trouble is, she's a minority government. That's a big problem. So she doesn't hold much sway anyway. Personally, I think, and it was written that she was a middle manager. She doesn't have the aggressiveness and the vision. Personally, I think if Boris Johnson had been doing it, it would be much better. And I think what we've lacked right from the beginning is to stand up to the EU, use the same tactics. Their stance has been to treat us like a naughty school children, and we are going to tell you what is going to happen. Given that it's unprecedented, it's not up to them to say what's going to happen. We should have simply said, no, we don't accept it. And that's the problem. And the reason that they're saying that they're rolling over is because they want to stay in. The Remainers, it's the infighting.
There is that, but there is also the lack of leverage. If you stand up and say, no, we're not going to do it that way, or we're not going to do what you, the EU, says, well, then the EU says, okay, if you're not going to do this, then just stay in.
No, or leave. Because the point
well,
about...
Well, or flat out leave and go,
yeah,
but I think it's...
But they're bluffing in the sense that they rely on us far more than we do on them for trade. So we actually, we don't need the EU as much as they're making out.
And well, then pack up and leave.
But the point about it is that for some reason, which I certainly don't understand, is this kind of timidity that the British government had taken in response. Bernier stands up and tells them, oh, by the way, you got to pay, but you have no say. Now, he's telling us that isn't a legal point. That's what he wants. We need to turn around and say, tough, we're not going to pay. Why aren't we doing that?
Well,
that's
the problem. Well, some people are, but the problem is some are saying that, some are saying something else, and nobody knows, and I don't think the government itself knows what they really feel and what they really want.
I think, what they really feel and what they want, I think they do. I think the problem is the infighting.
Well, yes, exactly. And she is not strong enough to say, all of you sit down and shut up. Here's what we're doing. I've talked to everybody, and this is the best thing we can want, and this is what's going to be the best deal for the UK, which nobody yet has defined.
It has been defined. I mean, in the Bruges speech from Margaret Thatcher, she actually said to the EU, you need to be more outward-looking. This is really a continuation of that. The EU is inward-looking. It is protectionist. It is a super state. It is about ruling it's an anomaly. Therefore, the deal that we should be asking for is what she said in the Lancaster speech.
And we're going live to the lines. 952-784-1000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. Brian, Los Policies.
Yes, Brian.
Again, briefly. I'm just wondering if your lady panellist considers, you know, not just the views of Jacob Rees-Mogg and Ian Duncan Smith and all the usual gang. I wonder if she's considered what pressure May is under as well from the City of London, who represent about 70% or 80% of our growth. And also, of course, what about the City of London? You know, not the City of London, so the Institute of Directors. All of them, Chamber of Commerce, they're all against the Brexit. I'm not going to go in now to the pro or anti-Brexit. I'm just making a comment. You can't just read the papers and listen to a handful of people who are extremely biased. And also, the other comment I would make is that, you know, most of the people that I know who voted Brexit, they come out here for holidays, they've got apartments here and houses, they've all said they didn't realise now just what the implications were. So let's not quite, let's a little bit more sort of calmness in our debate and not shouting all the odds on behalf of Brexit.
Well, the point is there was a referendum and I've heard this opinion from Remainers.
If I may just say one more thing. Most of the people, I got some very close friends come out here for holidays and I said to them one day, why did you vote for Brexit, by the way? And they said, well, you know, we don't like the idea of pensioners having the winter fuel allowance. I mean, I said, are you serious, you know? And then when I said to them, then a minute later, I let a little pause go by, and I said to them, by the way, when you come out here, I said, do you have private medical? No, they said, we've got a European card. And I said, oh, great. So I said, well, you lose that, you know, when we leave the Europe. What? And he turned to his wife, he said, God, we shouldn't have voted then. He said, we should have voted to stay in. That's the kind of, and I'm not demeaning my friends, that's the kind of mentality that a lot of people had about the Brexit vote.
Well, the thing about trashing Brexiteers, of course, is a great sport that the Remainers just love to do. But it's a moot point. It is utterly meaningless and wrong, because on the other side, there is equal trashing. But we don't, the Brexiteers do not trash the Remainers. Yes. They respect their point of view. So really, it doesn't really matter.
Well, why do you call them bemoaners when you know, they already had a vote on Brexit before and the Brexiteers lost?
Well, you've just been moaning about the Brexiteers.
No,
that's
no,
why
no,
they're
no.
called bemoaners.
I make an actual fact of life comment that the people who voted for Brexit the first time, they voted to remain. The sentiment has changed with people like Farage and all these who are quite cranky about it all, in my opinion. I'm going to be quite outspoken about this. And I'm absolutely sick to the teeth. I will debate it. I will sit down and consider it. But not to have somebody as anti the Remainers as you are, you're being personal about it as well. You're demeaning them. And the vote, the percentage vote was very, very limited, really. It was, 3-4% or something like that. And there's been opinion polls this week in the UK who have actually said that people now, the majority of people now, say they would like to have another referendum, including, by the way, your friend Farage.
Thank you for your call in there, Brian.
Okay, Giles.
Good to have you with us, as always. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at Talk Radio Europe. Story, studio at tre.radio is the email. Front page of the Times today said that Britain would be worse off outside the European Union in every way in the scenario modelled by a secret government analysis prepared for cabinet ministers. The assessment, which was due to be presented to ministers this week as part of an internal government discussions before negotiations with Brussels, looked at three Brexit scenarios based on existing EU arrangements. Under a comprehensive free trade agreement within the EU, British growth would be 5% lower over the next 15 years compared with present forecasts. According to the analysis, the no-deal scenario, which would mean Britain reverting to World Trade Organization rules, would reduce growth by 8% over that period. I'll go live to the lines again, 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, it's John from Los Police.
Yes, John.
Just to say, really, I remain an even more avid, couldn't care lesser, and the whole thing's stupid. But this, as you've just said, this last thing is quite ridiculous that they bought out by the Whitehall the Whitehall boys and the and their economists. These are the same guys who bought out the day after Brexit, the total nonsense that's proved to be. And anybody in their right mind who knows anything about the city or anything about the finance world, for someone to give a 15-year guide is absolutely bloody ridiculous. Half of them, including the top guys like the IMF, can't even give a guide for a year. And the, also the S&P and the Standard & Poor's have all proved to be totally useless. But for someone to give us a 15-year guide is absolute nonsense. And I always think, really, that, as I say, I really couldn't care less, that the only real thing that's going to come to the fore, well, I've been telling you, boy, for months, pain in the ass, I am, but when it comes down to the government, which it is now, not so much Barnier, but the government, intergovernments going on about this, they then have to become responsible to their corporations, their businesses, and their producers. And if anybody thinks bureaucrats or European bureaucrats will actually get involved, will actually be able to dictate to those people who produce, the workers who produce these things and the corporations who rely on it, they'll become peripheral to the argument. It'll become what is going to be detrimental to them. And just a word for Brian, my fellow Los Beliches guy, where all the high IQ boys are apart from me. When you talk about CBI and the city, and I was 50 years in the city earning a bloody good salary, we were, to the man against Brexit. And they would be, because the CBI basically, they will want to stay as they are, as the same as the city boys. We don't want to sacrifice our salaries or take a risk on our salaries. So they're naturally going to be pro-remaining. But also, I like to listen to the former CBI guys, who are all Brexiteers, because I think they're looking at it in a much more open way. And also, when we look at what's going to happen to the finance markets, I think Trump has given us maybe another 2 years, but we haven't had a crash yet or significant downturn. Pray we don't get it. But also one other point to make is that what was the point I was going to make? I'll leave. Oh, yeah, what I was going to say, really, is that... it's gone from my mind.
Oh, well then. Okay, well...
I'll bore you and call you back when I can remember
The
it.
Brain drain of Los Beliches continues there. Thanks very much for the call in. Quick break and then back.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Into the last 6 minutes of the show, going live to the lines. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I remember what I was going to say. Sorry, I'll be very brief. Just to say one thing we're not taking in consideration. If we remain, the EU have told us we're going to have to join the euro. We're not going to get a rebate, and all the other punishments that were going to be there are going to have to become part of the whole unique situation. And that will be, if we do have another referendum, that's going to be brought up. That we come back in, we've lost the rebate and various other punishments, and we'll have to mix in with everything. And the city boys, I know they're terrified of having a trading tax put on, which the EU have said they're going to do. And the very fact the city and the CBI are the very organizations who have the background and the will to actually cope with it. And they're the biggest moaners, apart from the former CBI chairmen and the business guys. Anyway, that's it for today. I'm going for a coffee in Los Beliches.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, thanks very much for your call in there. Oh, we had an email on studio@tre.radio from Sean, who says, May's problem is not her government as much as it's her biased and weak failure to obey the clear instructions of the people. As a member of the audience in a recent question time in Barnsley said, when we voted in the referendum, there was no page two asking whether we wanted a soft Brexit or a hard Brexit. 952-784-1000, quick to the lines. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Gray. Quick point for you. When I was a kid, I was in a club where we used to go on magical mystery tours. And some of the magical mysteries were fantastic, and we'd go to like London and stuff like that, and or to the coast. Some of them were a bit rubbish, where you go and visit some museum that had about three artifacts in there. And we all went on every single one, because if we were told where we were going in the first place, we probably wouldn't have gone. That's my analogy.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're saying Brexit is like a bit like a magical mystery tour. We've got no idea we're going to end up. We'll be on the coast. Yeah, we'll be in London, or will we be in a rubbish museum?
It's a magical mystery tour that you should be able to vote on afterwards. And I can't see why people who want to leave or to stay wouldn't want a vote on a future that they actually know what's going to happen.
Mm.
And I don't understand why that would be an issue for people. Why would they wouldn't want a second vote once they know the actual ins and outs?
Have a second referendum. Aren't you therefore, in a sense, rubbishing the idea of a referendum at all? It becomes meaningless, because then, if you have a second one, we can have a third one.
Well, the referendum was always in the principle of leaving the European Union.
It was in leaving, yeah.
No. It was the principle. In principle, do you want to? If you go back to the referendum, when the referendum was given by Cameron, it was the principle of. And the words were, do you want to leave, yes or no?
And which is pretty clear,
But it's not really. It's like, do you want to go to the fish and chip shop? Yes. Okay. Do you want Addicken chips? Do you want scampion chips? We all want different things from the chip shop.
I'm loving the analogies today, by the way. I must admit, they're great. Thanks for the call. We may be on a magical mystery tour. The question is, who is driving the bus on this particular one? And I'm more of a battered sausage man myself, but that's just a matter of opinion with the fish and chip shops. An email in as well, we've got a caller on the line, just one more caller before we're almost out of time, but we'll try and squeeze this one in. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller, you're live on TRE. And as my Welsh grandmother used to say, and there he was, gone. Into the last 1 minute and 28 of the show. Where do you think we stand there, therefore, on Brexit? I'll go to Nathan first, please.
Hasn't changed. I mean, there still doesn't seem to be any cohesive idea of what the UK really wants. And until they have that, I don't know how you negotiate.
Kate?
I think in the words of Rees-Mogg, basically, do we want to be a vassal state?
Cardi, your thoughts on the situation from the European point of view, if you will.
Well, I think the uncertainty is already damaging the UK economy. And unless there is a clear mandate of what Britain wants from Brexit. As Angela Merkel said a few days ago, she said that Theresa May has never told her what she expects or what she would like from Brexit. So it's not very clear. And also the division in the Conservative Party is also a big problem, and May's weak leadership. So I think there's going to be quite a lot of turbulence until the situation clears up and Brexit actually does happen. So we're in for a rough ride.
In for a rough ride, as we are less than just over a year to go now before Brexit comes into effect. What way it will, it remains to be seen. We're almost out of time. To my guest today, Claudia De La Torre.
Thank you very much.
Kate Mulvey.
Thank you.
And Nathan Thomas.
Always a pleasure.
This show will be repeated again at 6 o'clock. And thanks to the email who said, she may be your friend, but my blood pressure's gone through the roof. Stephen Ritson is up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.